Welcome to the Convene podcast. My name is Magdalena Atanasova, digital media editor of Convene and your host. Welcome to season 2, recorded at Convening Leaders 2024 in San Diego and dedicated to PCMA's 20 in their 20s program. In this episode, we shine a light on the impact of the younger generation on events, together with Derek Anderson from E3 Creative and Chase Brunson from the Project Management Institute. We dive into crucial topics such as diversity, equity, and inclusion, sustainability initiatives, navigating pushback, and mastering effective strategies for overcoming challenges. Enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Convene podcast. So let's start with some introductions and just briefly introduce yourselves and how many years you've been in the industry and anything else exciting you want to share.
Yeah, my name is Derek Anderson. I'm the founder of E3 Creative. I have been in the events world for about 11 years now, accidentally fell into it, into the nonprofit world of events, and was with nonprofit organizations for about 10 years. And at that time, I kind of took a leap of faith. I call it the post-pandemic leap and started my own company where I still work with nonprofit, but I get to do it on my own. So I work with various nonprofit organizations in the Pacific Northwest.
Cool. I've been in the events industry for also about 11 years now, coming off my 11th year, but that's like really early. I started out in transportation and I kind of fell into it as well when I was in college, working on my college campus. I majored in sports management, so nothing that has anything to do with events, but I was doing that as like my student job. And so when I graduated, I was like, I want to stay in events, but I don't want to do transportation. And so kind of same thing. I just started to apply for jobs. I got a event management job from the Oregon Society of CPAs up in Oregon. So I moved from Texas to Oregon, basically started my event career there. And I've stayed in nonprofit associations for the most part. I did a short like 6 month stint at a hotel and then COVID hit. So I quickly lost that job. And then I immediately went back to association management again. So that's where I've been for most of my career.
How do you use your innovative mindset to drive positive change within the organizations or with the organization that you work with in terms of clients or that you're employed by?
Yeah. I like to jump in with as much optimism as I can possibly jump into any event with. And really for me, the sky's the limit. I think that what I quickly discovered, especially in attending Convening Leaders, was that while there are these amazing association and corporate planners who are doing these, you know, massive shows and endless budgets that I could only dream of, I could easily take those ideas and start to bring them down in size around a budget that was still impactful for the attendee and that still left them going, wow, I'm so glad I took time out of my day to travel and be at that event. And so for me, it's just that excitement of knowing that like I'm up for the challenge and passing that along to the client of saying like, let's do this. Let's do something big. What is some item that you've just absolutely loved at a previous professional conference? And how can we bring that to this small to mid-sized event? And it's really fun to be able to do and see them at the end go, wow, we really pulled that off. We did it and everyone enjoyed it. So,
yeah, I think for me, being in association management has been really fun for my age group because every association I've ever been in has been really small until recently, like teams of 6 to 10 people or so. And I've been the youngest in the room by like 30 years, like a good number of years. And so I think it's been really fun to join, especially as the event manager in these associations, and be able to bring like fresh ideas, like new perspectives, and be able to tell these people that have really grown up with the associations. Both ones that I spent a lot of time at, my executive directors had, that was the only job they'd ever had. They'd started out at the bottom of the company and then they worked their way up through the secretary, through the event manager role, through finance, operations, whatever, and then they finally became the CEO. And so a lot of them didn't really have like any other kind of perspective about things. And it had been, you know, 40 years since they'd been in my position. And so I think it's really fun to bring in like a young professional aspect and really take that whole, like the way we've always done it. I've heard that a lot in my career and kind of changed that to be like, well, I understand like there's some history and we can definitely use that history and those data points to like know what we need to be doing, but we can change it and we can make it fresh and we can reach the young professionals that we're trying to reach as long as we have like new incoming ideas.
Do you have any examples that come to mind?
Well, one for me, obviously I'm really big into diversity and inclusion efforts. And so at my first job, we were lacking in, I served CPAs. So no offense to accountants, but CPAs aren't the most exciting folks usually, and they'll tell you that too. And so getting them to do event things is interesting anyway. Like, they'll come for their CPE and then they're done and they don't want to do anything else. But while I was at that organization, we had just very standardized conferences where, you know, like, you would come and you would just learn and you would leave and that was it. And so it was doing things like, I understand they don't want to necessarily socialize, but adding happy hours into things or adding networking breaks that weren't happy hours. They didn't have to stay after. They didn't feel like a big thing to them. But also live streaming events was a huge thing. When I entered my first organization in like 2017, they were live streaming one single conference out of the 20 that they had. Wow. And by the time I left 2 years later, we were live streaming every conference, and we had brought all of the gear in-house. So I worked with our AV provider that we were paying about 10 grand a conference to live stream. And he was trying to get out of do it. He was doing it for us as a favor. And so he sat down and worked with me, and he helped me design a conference system that was portable and that we could take out with us for about $12,000. So his fee one time, and then we used that for all 20 conferences over and over and over again. And to my knowledge, they're still using that same conferencing system. Wow. And so that was really cool, like watching that organization go from not being online at all or only a little bit to watching them come online fully and be able to offer more educational opportunities, especially because we were a state-based organization, but we were based in the capital city. So we were really, at the time, only serving the accountants or the people that were in that one city. Whereas we went online, we were able to hit the whole state, which is what we should have been doing anyway as an association. So things like that. And also just introducing new concepts, like it's time for a women's conference now. Like we have to like elevate other voices in these industries that are really predominantly dominated by white males kind of thing. So things like that.
Derek?
You know, I think the most fun that I've had the opportunity to take a client and really throw out the concept of just breakout sessions. You know, it's just endless breakout session after endless breakout session. And it was time to do something different. And it was actually an EduCon event in Fort Lauderdale that kind of flipped the script for me, where I went, oh, wow, we can try something vastly different. And that was to really embrace the different ways that an attendee learns, that it's not just sitting in the room staring at a PowerPoint presentation. You know, how can we create an experience where they're doing an activity while they're listening to a session? And so, you know, we had a rock painting station, and we took a local artist who ran a sip and paint studio and brought them in. And so we had these various stations, and we turned the ballroom into one giant breakout room where we had artists, we had, you know, coloring stations. And then we had actual places where folks could go sit and listen and pay attention to the PowerPoint if they wanted to. But what we found were that, you know, 90% of the attendees, they weren't going anywhere. Like, they were there. They weren't wandering off. They weren't sneaking off to go somewhere else. They were sticking around. They were painting, and they were just tuning in like they were listening to a podcast. And they absolutely loved it. And now what's so awesome is that when I get on a Zoom call with them and they've got their painting in the background on the desk or on the wall, and it's so cool to see, because I know that that's a memory for them that they've, you know, that they want to capture and remind themselves of later on. So that's kind of the fun things that we've been able to do that really changed the thinking. And it was not an easy sell by any means. And there was definitely grumbles before and after. But I think ultimately in the end, folks went, yeah, we could do that again. And now we just do a smaller version. I definitely advise, don't try to do all of them at one time. We ripped the Band-Aid off a little too hard, but it paid off in the end.
How about diversity and inclusion? I know, Chase, you're a big proponent, and you've been to many of our conferences at PCMA speaking about the issue. So how do you manage to actually pass on the message internally in the organization?
For me, it starts right in the beginning. I'm to the point now where I think as a society, we're changing a little bit within reason. We've gone forward, we've gone backwards.
Yeah.
I think when I first started my career, I was a little bit more, I guess, like afraid of being who I am and being like out and being like my full like Chase self or whatever. I was very much, especially the organizations being in associations and being like very put together and having to dress, you know, like this every day kind of thing. I would kind of hide myself from my like superiors, and I wouldn't tell them anything about my history or my past or anything like that. And now I'm to the point where this stuff is so important to me that if I'm changing jobs or if I'm looking for a new job, I'm just telling them that right in the beginning. I'm like, you know what, hey, like I really care about diversity and inclusion efforts, and I need to know like what your company is doing. How are you supporting employees first and foremost? That's what I want to come on, and I want to be my full authentic self at work, because I feel like that's how we work better. And then because I'm an event manager and I'm usually interviewing with other event managers in their event positions, I'll ask them, what are your diversity initiatives for your clientele as well? So like, what are you currently doing? training for your attendees to make them feel welcome at your events. And then they either won't have like fully fleshed out answers or they're not ready to answer that question. And I'm fine with that. I understand that that's not always like what a lot of people are thinking of, like I am constantly. And so I'll follow up and I'll ask, okay, well, what diversity initiatives would you like to see in the next, you know, year or so, 5 years or so, 10 years or so? And so just knowing that they are thinking about it is enough for me. And then I know that I can come into that organization and kind of help them along and say like, okay, well, this is what I've done in my past jobs. This is what I've done in my personal career. You know, how can we move forward with like some of these initiatives like that? So just right from the ground zero, I'm figuring companies out now. Cause I'm, like I said, I want to show up fully for work. And so if it's not a company that I'm going to feel accepted at, I just don't even want to go down that road with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And Derek, do you have any touch points with the topic or anything that you do for your clients currently?
Yeah, you know, what I've been trying to do is I've really been trying to push the client to think about that first-time attendee, that younger attendee that's joining the conference for the first time. And the reason for that is that, you know, associations, at least the ones that I've dealt with, tend to be pretty cliquish. And so you don't get that big, warm invitation for that first-time attendee. I can remember attending my first PCMA event and being like, ugh, what did I get myself into? Who are all these people? And, you know, what I found was that if we can bring that forefront, that mindset of thinking about who that first time attendee is and what you want their experience to be like, you know, the client wants to start to make those changes. They want to bring in the diversity and inclusion elements, but they also, you know, they want their organizations to be representative of their communities, right?
Yeah.
They want to open those up. So I think it's just, you know, to Chase's point, they're not thinking about it. It may not always be top of mind. So I like to go in with that immediate thought of, you know, what does that first time attendee need to experience? What do you want them to have? And then, you know, push them, you know, to uncomfortable levels sometimes of saying, you know, these are what your attendees are expecting, and being really direct with them, because, you know, there are some that it's like threading a needle in some associations of kind of letting go of the, well, we used to do it all. We've always done it that way mindset.
I also think it's important for the like diversity as a strategy, like interweaving diversity, like right from the beginning. I think a lot of we're seeing it in our, I think because we're talking about it so much in the meetings industry right now that we're making some really good progress forward with that. But I think a lot of people, they want to plan their conferences and then think about the diversity aspect. And 100%. Usually that means they plan the conference and then they're looking for diverse speakers. And then that is like the ultimate, that's what they're doing. And they feel very good about that. And I think those are like, to your point, like really good starting blocks, like right in the beginning. Like if you're coming onto an organization, they don't have anything, like, it's a great place to start. But at that, you know, as you keep going the next year, the year after that, if you can start thinking about diversity and inclusion right from the get-go, like when you're thinking about your city selection, you're thinking about your venue selection, your vendors, then you can get down and say, okay, we've also got diverse speakers and we've also got diverse people on the exhibit hall floor. But I definitely encourage event planners to use diversity as a strategy and not as an afterthought instead. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Another such topic is sustainability, right? Mm-hmm. Something that still come as an afterthought. Do you have to deal with the topic of sustainability as well? And do you have any strategies?
I'll let you take it, Finn.
Yeah, for sustainability, it's been an interesting challenge. Even being in the Pacific Northwest, where we're pretty green, I do find that we're running into several obstacles, one of which kind of blew me away, but just it's the staffing levels and the financial impacts that it has on the venues that we're contracting with. And so, you know, they're turning to cheaper resources, and that doesn't always, you know, even asking for something as simple as glassware at the water stations is a huge challenge for some of the venues that I work with. It's really, you know, going in and having that conversation with the client to say, where do you stand? What do you want to see? Here are some options, some small steps that we can make that add up in the grander scheme. So looking at the vegetarian options for a meal, at least one meal, has been huge. And most of my clients are willing to take that leap of at least one meal, you know, to turn a whole conference vegan. That's a bit of a challenge still, but to do one meal. And it helps, you know, for me, what I've found really fascinating in working in these small associations is, in some cases, this is the only event someone gets to attend. It might be the first event, the professional event that they've ever attended. I just had an event recently where the attendee, it was their first time staying in a hotel. Yeah.
And like, we can't imagine it anymore.
Yeah. And I thought, wow, that is incredible. And this is the experience that you get to have. And some come from really small areas and rural areas, and they don't get to see or experience these things. So, you know, to help kind of educate them through that process and help them be aware of the impacts and the changes that we can make in these small settings can really make a huge impact. So for me, it's taking that step of working with the hotel partners and see what's capable. I work with so many different properties in rural areas that they don't have that exposure as well. So it's coming in and saying, this is what we've been able to accomplish in other locations. And here, how can we work together to try to get as close as possible to what we've been doing in these bigger venues?
Right. I agree as well. I think with sustainability, especially the smaller organizations, the smaller associations are having issues. It's a money constraint is what it is. Because I don't think people who are not focusing on sustainability don't realize how it's a budget line item sometimes. Like sometimes it's sustainable, but it's more expensive to do it that way. And so you've got some of these corporations, like I work for the Project Management Institute, our budgets are bigger than what I'm used to dealing with. And so we've got a little bit more money to play with sustainability things, but other organizations don't have that. And so I think it's just starting small. It's like talking about like what we can do. So it is using things like glassware, or here at the Community Leaders, we've got the refillable water bottles and things like that. Those are all great steps. And I think something a lot of small organizations are not considering that has been huge for me over the course of the years is going to conferences like this. We've eliminated a lot of the like printed materials finally. That was a great step. But what we're doing now is, you know, you get like the hotel pens and you're like, you put that in your RFPs, like I need notebooks and pens at every station or whatever. And the hotel will do that. And that's usually fine. It's marketing for them. I would suggest working with local CVBs and things like that, or your destination marketing companies, whatever, wherever your partner is for the city. And you can find places like schools to donate stuff to. And that's, it doesn't cost anything. You're just like, hey, when we get done with this, we're going to have a dozen Sharpies and, you know, 500 highlighters and 4 pens and 12 packs of papers. And that creates number, you're giving back to the community that you've just, you know, come into. And so that's great. You're also, in my mind, you're keeping sustainability efforts high because you're not shipping all that stuff back to your office. Yes. And then a lot of our stuff we label and we brand, so we can't use it over and over again. So I encourage planners to think about, you know, Convening Leaders we do every year. Do we have to put Convening Leaders 24, 25, 26? Do we have to keep doing that? Can we just say Convening Leaders? We know it's going to be called every year. So if you have like a yearly program that's going on, like removing years and things like that, like I said, just the easiest thing to do is just ask your local CVB, where can we donate the materials that we're not going to use the rest of the time? It's a very simple sustainability step.
Could you think of a situation where you tried to bring a positive change to either an organization or a client and you faced some pushback? And how did you handle that situation?
Honestly, live streaming has been a catalyst for me for several years now. I was, like I said, when I came to my first organization in 2017, that was, you know, 3 years before COVID. And you had some organizations that were online, but a lot of us weren't. A lot of events weren't even being live streamed, or like mega events were, and that was really it. And I feel like every organization I've been into, even after 2020, if they don't currently have like a live streaming option, it's almost like pulling teeth to get them to do that. And to me, it's even worse when we have organizations or events that are being recorded, but they're not actively being live streamed. That's crazy to me. I understand that it's running two events at the same time, but there's ways that we can do that. You know, you can, if you don't have the manpower, there's, you can get contractors or other folks in your industry to help. But you're already doing it and you're losing out on a lot of revenue by not, like, it's already there. You've already paid for that camera to be there, like all that kind of stuff. And so I've gotten a lot of pushback over the course of the years on that. And every time it happens, I just go back and show the statistics. Like, our industry has done these studies that show when you live stream something, it does not affect in-person attendance. And I don't know why, when I tell other event professionals that, it's still like a light goes off in their head and they're like, there's no way. I don't believe that. I'm like, it was literally a study that we did in like 2018 and it does not affect in-person attendance. And so I think it's just going back to, if you want to make a positive change, you got to have the why behind it. Okay. So like, I want to live stream events because we can serve more of our attendees like this. Live streaming is an accessibility tool as well. Yes. It's a really big thing for me to live stream and to be online and things like that. And so you have to have a purpose behind it and a why behind it to go to leadership with. And then I think it doesn't matter if you're talking about the events industry or anything else, it's all about that budget line item. So if I can sit there and I can prove to you it's not going to cost any extra, or it might only cost X amount of extra, but here's the return on investment for it, that's how I've been able to finally convince people. And I've not had any pushback after I've like sat there and been like, here is like a PowerPoint on why we've got to do this, or here's the bulleted points on why we've got to do this. But there has been some initial like, oh, okay, like show us why, and then we'll think about it. So
there are two things that come to mind. One is getting rid of some of the traditions, the annual banquet, right, that everyone loves to have, the cold prime rib or the dry chicken, and getting rid of that and turning those into networking events. That's hard for some associations that constantly want to, you know, stick to the same routine, but then find that they're maximizing their dollars better. And, you know, mm-hmm. because people just weren't attending those banquets in the end and you had a lot of plates left over. So, you know, trying to really help organizations work through that process of understanding where they're investing their dollars. You know, do they need to have the big breakfasts anymore? Or do most people want to go grab a coffee and a pastry at a local coffee shop and get to experience the city that they're in? And I think that's the other is that it's so much more about the experience that you know, I'm really trying to drive home with my clients. You know, the attendee is there certainly to network and learn and, you know, have those takeaways from the event, but they also need that downtime. They need to go and have that opportunity to go explore a cool, you know, destination within a city, have a great meal, and maybe, you know, make a new connection that even is outside the conference. And that's okay. It's important for folks to have. I think the other for me is around AV. I think a lot of associations think that they can bare bones the AV, you know, they want to bring in the projector, they're going to borrow from so-and-so, you know, somebody has a camera that they're going to bring and they're going to live stream it with the borrowed camera that they don't know how to use. And so it really is driving home that message of through leveraging live streaming and the registration revenue that you get through a live stream audience, you can usually, you know, enhance your AV and work with and build a rapport with, you know, an AV team that can help you build your show and make it more than it was. I work with AV company that kind of just follows me around to all of my client events. It's been fantastic. But here was a small AV company, you know, in a mid-sized city in my state that I, you know, randomly partnered with on one event. We hit it off and then, you know, they kind of came immersed and now they're a part of the entire package. But, you know, I went to a PCMA, a local PCMA chapter event in the Pacific Northwest, and it's all around sustainability. And presenter was talking about digital signage and how much foam core do I burn through in a year with client events that I would love to, you know, at the end of the event, not have a stack sitting there going, what do I do with this? This is so wasteful. So in taking that partnership with that AV company that we've fostered, we're producing digital signage now that eliminates that foam core need. So it's really educating the client of, you know, here are some positive impacts that you can make and build some partners, some long-lasting partnerships that will not only benefit the attendee, but just make the overall organization look more professional and make the attendee experience better. I mean, if you can actually hear the presenter, that's a huge win, right? When you're spending that money on a speaker.
Yeah. And wrapping the conversation, was there anything we didn't address and we should have?
No, I don't think so. I mean, for me, it's always diversity and inclusion is big, and we talked about it, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I would say is if there's a new PCMA member out there that's listening or somebody that's considering getting involved in PCMA, you know, really take the leap, even at the local level. When I jumped in 2012, I didn't know a single person and I didn't know a single thing about the events industry. And I am so incredibly thankful that I took the leap and was encouraged to do so and got that mentorship that was so vital. And the organization really does give back. The industry itself can give back. So even for those that are out there and might think that they don't have the budget or the support from their leaders, there is something for you here. So take the leap and give it a try.
Nice message. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you both for being on the podcast, and I'm looking to another episode with you.
Great. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you would like additional perspectives on the industry, check out pcma.org/convene. Until next time.